This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Listeners, today I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She joins us today on a Tuesday, since yesterday, Labor Day, was a holiday. If you have questions about diet and nutrition, give us a call. Susan will do her best to help you. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area. 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And she is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Questions about diet and nutrition? They're invited this afternoon. Again, the phone numbers 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good
nice
to be here.
Nice to see you. Doesn't feel like it outside, but climatologically anyway, it's fall.
It is, I guess.
The temperature will fall soon enough, I suppose. Well, what would you like to begin with this afternoon while we wait for folks to join us on the telephone?
Well, first I'd like to just begin with a few ideas for maybe healthy snacks for kids, healthy lunches, now that we're back to school, some things we can think about and maybe some things parents can do. The American Dietetic Association has a lot of good information on their website, which is just www.eatright.org, and they put tips up there quite a bit, and certainly those are really pertinent because they're healthy as well as practical things that people can do. And a couple of things that they really recommend now that school's back in session is, you know, first of all, to become familiar with your child's lunch menu. If they don't take their lunch to school and they're going to actually be eating off the menu, that can be a real big help just in terms of planning your meals, too, to make sure that you're getting balance. And also just to even pose a quick question when your child gets home from school in terms of what did he or she eat, what did he or she like, and those kinds of things, so we can get an idea of what they are eating at school. Because sometimes that, I know for me, is a challenge if you don't know what your child is eating. Other things is actually when you get the menu, just go over it with your child to kind of prepare them, because sometimes we know new foods, if your child's going to have new foods, maybe they're not going to be as apt to want to try them. But if they even know what's coming or remember you talked about what this might look like, or those kinds of things, that really helps kids eat better. So I think that's helpful, too. And then if you are sending a lunch with your child, I think a couple things are really helpful. One is to make sure your child kind of helps pick out the foods if they can. So if they're grocery shopping with you, I kind of have a rule of thumb with my daughter, and she likes to bring her lunch to school. And so when we shop, she gets to pick three fruits and three vegetables that she's going to want that week as part of the lunch. And not that she always eats them, mind you, but usually she does.
Yeah.
But that's a help, too, because then they can kind of be part of that planning. And you know, you can certainly get the rest of the lunch ready. But if they've got options and the things that you really want to make sure that they're eating, I think that's helpful as well.
Okay.
So all those things can be good.
We've got a listener who's waiting to talk with you, Susan, in Champaign, a caller waiting for us on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. For an individual whose weight is good and who's quite physically active, what do you think is the evidence or lack of evidence against eating, say, an excessive amount of sugar, or, not directly, but products that have sugar in, when one, gets good vitamins, gets good fruits and vegetables, controls one's fat intake, but the percentage of calories coming from simple sugars is high. Is that, do you think that's a danger, or is that not a danger? And I'll just turn my radio on and listen.
Okay.
Well, brings up a really good point, because we hear all this information now about sugar. I think the thing that we're hearing more about is cutting down on sugar, or fructose corn syrup and these kinds of things and what to be aware of. I think, as a listener mentioned, if your diet is sound, if it's balanced, if you've got your bases covered, you're getting plenty of protein, you're getting plenty of fruits and vegetables, you're getting fiber, you're getting whole grains, and you're so active and your weight is good that allows you more calories, then that really does give you not necessarily green light to eat everything else from sugar, but you could have a higher percentage of your diet that comes from maybe processed sugars or simple sugars because you're getting everything in. I mean, ideally, we want to think that as we get more calories, as we need more calories, what we're going to do is eat kind of more of the food guide pyramid or basically eat more, also more whole grains and more fruits and more vegetables. But, you know, my general rule of thumb when I'm working with clients or when I'm working with athletes is that maybe 10% of your diet really should come from whatever you like. I mean, you know, that might be 200 calories for some people. For people who are very active, that might be 400 or 500 calories, which is a considerable amount that might come from a Snickers bar and some other thing with sugar, where I don't feel like that would really damage the body or have a negative effect necessarily. So I do think a lot of it is if you're maintaining weight, we know we know now more than ever that is just so important and that's so helpful for a lot of things for the body. And I don't think that it's a problem as long as the bases are covered. And that might be a good thing for this listener to do or for anyone to do is to, you know, be able to get on the My Pyramid website and be able to get up there and put in your activity and your age. You can do all that. And then it'll give you an idea of servings from the different food groups. That would be a general idea of what's appropriate for you. And so if you do that and you say, well, gosh, I'm meeting those goals most days, then the other things you eat probably... It would not be a problem.
Yeah, a little frosting on the cake.
Yeah, it's kind of like a lot of people who like to have one or two beers a day, and they get that question a lot. Maybe they drink a little bit of alcohol or they drink a soda or something like that and wonder if that's okay. And that really doesn't necessarily have to be a problem if you're eating well otherwise. And so those calories might not be high nutrient calories, but they certainly can fit into a healthy diet if it's something you really enjoy.
Yeah, but the important thing is to keep in mind the foundation for that.
Exactly.
That frosting, so to speak.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener in El Paso, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have a question about sugars. Some of the, I'll call them fake sugars, have aspartame in them, which I guess is not good. Then we got Splenda, which now I'm hearing is a genetically engineered something or other that's not good for you. And then I've also been hearing about stevia, and I was wondering if you could clear this all up for me, what's good for you, what's not good for you, or should we just stick the rate with the regular good old sugar? And I'll listen offline.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, there are a lot of opinions about sweeteners. We do know that. There's a good review of sweeteners, and some people might call it biased. I think it's actually a pretty good review that's on the International Food Information Council website, which is just www.ific.org, and that's a good review. You can pull up there and get a review of different types of sweeteners, what they all are, what they're made from, those kinds of things. But I think from what we know about the studies, we look at something like Splenda or aspartame or some of the sweeteners that are around in foods now, Splenda probably being one of the more popular ones now since it's a little bit more new and is used in a lot of things. I think that still you want to go back to that idea of your base of your diet. In other words, if you have one or two food products that have artificial sweeteners in them in a day, to me, I don't think that that's a problem. I wouldn't be a stickler and say never have something like that. But what we do get more concerned about is people having a lot of artificial sweeteners, because we certainly think that the ones that are approved in the U.S., the ones that you see on labels, are relatively safe because they've been studied. But it's important to remember that in some countries, other sweeteners might be approved, and certain ones that we have approved might not be approved. So there's certainly discrepancy in what scientists believe around the world. And a good example is, you know, stevia is not approved as a food here. It's approved as a supplement. So it wasn't approved to be actually as a food product. So people can buy it. They can buy it more as a supplement. And that's just a different type of strong sweetener, too, and it, you know, that's different from sugar. So I guess my rule of thumb would be if you have a serving or have two in a day, I would not spend time worrying about that, because you know that the base of your diet is regular food, is, you know, obviously the best sweeteners we can have are natural sweeteners like fruit, because that's something that has other nutrients. So once you get to where you're saying, well, 3, 4, or 5 servings a day or more of things that I'm drinking, maybe I drink, you know, 8 cans of Diet Coke a day. Well, that can't be very healthy. We don't know if those artificial sweeteners are really going to cause problems with you down the road, but we do know that probably your diet's lacking other things. And so to me, it's more about, are you missing out on other things if you use a lot of diet products? You know, even people who are diabetic and have to watch the sugar intake, what we know is what's most important is they're also getting fiber, and a lot of the artificially sweetened foods maybe aren't as high in fiber as if you had, you know, an apple that has natural carbohydrate, natural sugar. That's good. You need some of that, but you also get fiber. And so no matter what sweetener you have, I would say keep it to a serving or two a day. That's certainly reasonable for most people. And then try to get more regular foods in so you're not eating a lot of diet products or sugar-free products.
And mention again the organization that did the review of sweeteners.
It's the International Food Information Council. And I believe the website is www.ific.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll put links
okay
on our website to the things that we talk about this afternoon. In the meantime, let's take another call. A listener in Eureka, line 1. Good afternoon. You're on the air with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat.
Yes. At the beginning of the program, you mentioned a website. Could you repeat that, please?
That was eatright.org.
Eatright.org, okay.
Yeah, www.
And would the American Diabetic Association be the website for hints and recommendations on food for diabetics?
Yes, the website we just mentioned, it gets a little confusing. It's actually the American Dietetic Association, or the ADA, American Dietetic Association, which there's a lot of general nutrition, but the American Diabetes Association, which I believe is just diabetes.org, so it's just www.diabetes.org, is a great website for general diabetes information. Not only can you get a lot of good information on finding out about diabetes and treatment and those kinds of things, but there's also a lot of good information on nutrition there. And I would also say that the American Diabetes Association puts out great information on just basic cookbooks, and I haven't gotten them yet, but I just ordered 2 or 3 new cookbooks that they have out from the American Diabetes Association that would be appropriate for someone with diabetes, but also just healthy eating. So if you're just looking for general recommendations for nutrition and cooking that are just healthy, the American Diabetes Association is fantastic with that as well.
And that's diabetes.org?
Yes.
Would you have any other recommendations on diabetic websites and or good food?
Mm-hmm. Well,
websites?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a couple things that you might want to look at. Certainly the National Institutes of Health, when we look at the FDA and some of the national links to organizations that deal with diabetes, that's a great place to start. If you look at, even if you just looked at FDA.gov, at that website, if you're going online and you look through nutrition, and there's tons of links through those websites as far as diabetes and health and that kind of thing. So that's a great place to look. I think we're even finding things, you know, a lot of products that you might eat that maybe would help with blood sugars. And maybe one example would be something like oatmeal, which we know oatmeal is a soluble fiber. It's a gummy fiber. We know it helps with lipids, and it also may help with blood sugar regulation. And even some of the websites like Quaker Oats, now they have a lot of materials and information up on their website. General Mills, for example, has a lot of information on their website on how to eat to control blood sugars or how to eat to control lipids. And so we're finding things off of a lot of the company sites that are trying to do a lot more as well.
Okay. Is the caller still there?
You want to yes. Could I ask one more
sure
question, please? What is the National Institute for Health website?
I think it's it's
NIH.
It's NIH. And I don't know if it's NIH.gov.
Put it in your browser, and that'd probably be the easiest thing to do.
Okay.
National Institutes of Health, yeah.
Okay.
And
the
CDC as well. Okay, the CDC, USDA,
right.
FDA.
And they all kind of link to each other. So I think once you get on there and get nutrition.
There's many hyperlinks there
right
in those sites. So Susan will look that up to be precise, and I will reintroduce our guest this afternoon. Registered dietitian Susan Krundrot is with us this afternoon. She's with Nutrition on the Move. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She's here today because yesterday was a holiday, Labor Day. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. If you've got a question about diet and nutrition, give us a call. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Did you come up with something?
Well, I do have some of the websites, let's say the National Institutes of Health website, where you can actually get some of the reviews and recommendations. It's kind of a long one, though, so I might suggest you might be able to get it just by www.nih.gov. I would try that first, and then there are some other long ones. But what I would say is to go through FDA, because the FDA.gov would be sort of the main one that you can get, and then get the nutrition through there. That seems to be the best route, and otherwise I'd put it in your browser because some of these are really long.
Yeah, okay. We'd be here all afternoon. Let's take another call. A listener on line one, I believe, is coming up next in queue. Good afternoon. Okay, let's try line four, the toll-free line. Good afternoon. Where are you calling from?
Central Illinois.
Central Illinois. Okay, good afternoon.
Yes, I had a question. There's a lot of hype about these cleansing your system and detoxifications through different techniques, whether through colonics or other different ways. Are any of those recommended for anybody?
Well,
is there anything to them, or is it just the newest hype?
It's certainly more popular now than it ever used to be, because we're seeing all kinds of programs to do that. Well, there are two ways to look at things. If you're eating well consistently, if you're relatively regular, if you're eating a lot of fiber, you know, there may not be a real reason to necessarily use a cleansing program. And what you're talking about, it could be a lot of different things. It could be herbal cleansing, liquid cleansing, where the idea is you actually get your body to kind of get rid of everything, and you might even fast along with that for a day or two, or just have liquids to kind of clear out the whole gastrointestinal tract before you start eating again. And there are some people who believe that that's really beneficial. There are others, and physiologically, my take is more that if you're eating consistently and you're, again, you're regular and you're eating very well, there may not be a benefit to necessarily cleansing your whole system like that. I think somewhere in the middle, which might be something that people feel more comfortable with, is even saying, well, I'm going to try for a couple days to really boost my fruit and vegetable intake, where instead of eating three or four a day of each, you may eat six or seven a day of each, which is generally enough that it will give you a lot more bulk in the system. And if you are more constipated, that usually will help move things through. Mm-hmm. And you might find that you even, you know, have a little diarrhea and get things moved through more. And that, to me, would be sort of a more natural way to kind of move everything through the system. And the things you want to watch with some of the cleansing is that for some people, they will end up getting dehydrated, very dehydrated, because it does bring a lot of those herbs or a lot of the supplemental ones will bring a lot of fluid to the gut, which flushes everything out, which is what they're supposed to do. But then you really have to drink a lot of fluids, because you can get severely dehydrated. Occasionally, we might see people who also end up having some electrolyte imbalances, mm-hmm. because you've lost fluid and electrolytes with that. So I would say that if you really wanted to use a cleanse that's more a little bit more harsh like that, just maybe contact your doctor, make sure it's okay for you to do something like that. There might be, you know, recommendations. Certainly there are some that are not as harsh as others, some that are more gentle. But when clients ask me, I say, well, probably a first thing to do would be just take a couple days, bump up your fruits and vegetables and your juices, and maybe have more of a natural cleanse that way, as opposed to using something more harsh at first, just to make sure it's safer.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we're going to take another call. A listener in Morris, Illinois, on line one. Hi. Morris, Illinois?
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Yeah, I got a question for you. I've got vertigo. I've got that Meniere's vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been told by my ear, nose, and throat specialist to cut back on the salt, you know, enough that you can't completely cut it out, but, you know, I do the best I can. But I, every once in a while, can feel a sensation that coming on, or, you know, you get this wooziness. I've been trying to basically cut back on a lot of stuff, and I was wondering, are there any natural herbs or food should be eating more of or less of that maybe help me? You kind of get lethargic after a while from, you know, not eating a lot of this stuff, and it make, you know, for some reason I get turned off with food a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know of any particular food, you know, that will actually help with vertigo. Although, like you say, usually it has effect, you know, it's being affected by fluid levels, and that's affected by sodium levels. And so often you really have to monitor your sodium intake. Just like you said, that's the one thing that we look at closely. I think the other thing is make sure you are hydrated, because you do have to, again, because it's related somewhat to fluid and fluid balance. And for some people too, when they're trying to, you know, maintain sodium levels, or is, you know, potassium plays a role with that too. So that might be something to ask your doc about, you know, what your potassium levels are, and should you be increasing potassium as you cut down on sodium? Would that be helpful for you? I mean, everybody's different with that, but they both play a role in fluid balance. And, you know, we know with blood pressure, for a lot of people, they maintain better blood pressure if they increase natural potassium levels, particularly from foods like fruits and vegetables, as they decrease sodium in the diet. And so I'm not sure if in your case that would be a help, but it certainly would be something to ask about, as well as keeping your sodium levels down. Like you mentioned, sometimes you get to where you're not really that interested in food, because once you cut sodium down quite a bit, sometimes things don't taste as good, or they're not tasting the same as what you're used to. So that can be a problem even to eat enough in that situation. And of course, you want to make sure you do that, because you want to keep your energy up overall. But I would look into, I would really monitor the sodium like you're doing, because that seems to be the main thing. And then also perhaps see if you should be doing anything with potassium based on your levels and where you are.
I've been trying to go basically organic on everything, breads, you know, fruits and vegetables, trying to get away from a lot of that. It's difficult when you go through the store and you start looking at all the labels. You kind of get, you know, mind-boggling mm-hmm. with all the garbage they put in, all the things that are, and, you know, I'm starting to begin to feel a little bit better by cutting all that out. But you'd be amazed what, and no wonder we're obese around here. Anyway, thank you very much. Very informative.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited. Questions about diet and nutrition, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. What are some of the fruits and vegetables naturally high in potassium?
Well, we always think of things like bananas,
right?
So certainly bananas, melon, tomatoes, potatoes, most fruits and vegetables are pretty good sources of potassium. So again, if you think you just kind of are trying to add more fruits and vegetables in general, then typically you'll increase potassium. Even things like apricots are good sources of potassium. And so that's a big help, but a baked potato is an excellent source of potassium. Sometimes people will cut those out thinking, gosh, are they too salty, or they're not salty unless you add a lot of salt to them, but mm-hmm. they're so high in potassium that they're a good addition as well. One thing I'll comment on too, that the listener, he made an interesting point, and like he was saying, going more organic, trying to go to more natural foods, and oftentimes those foods are going to be helpful because often they're lower in sodium. But just to know that just because something is organic, it also might be very high in salt if it's an organic processed food or if it's an organic soup.
Sure,
or
you can
like
have
that.
Organic cake and mm-hmm. cookies and whatnot.
Exactly. So a lot of those, still you'd have to really monitor the sodium in those as well.
Okay, very good. No one waiting at the moment for Susan Kundrat. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Speaking of, going back to the idea of the lunchbox and that kind of thing, and, you know, that's a way that you can help yourself and your family, I suppose, if you're the one responsible for this, although it's usually, as you mentioned before, it's usually helpful to have whoever the lunch is for involved.
Right.
But another issue that comes up as a result of this, I mean, you have control then. I mean, with kids, you don't know how much of the lunch that's in the box is going to be eaten or traded or thrown away or whatever. But you do have some idea of what was in there.
Mm-hmm.
What about planning for snacking and putting a snack in addition into the lunchbox so that that could be eaten on the way home or at some point in the day if there's a break? I don't.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've been in school.
It's a great idea because, and even you could market snack. I mean, so kids know that that's what they're going to maybe save or have for their snack. But we know kids, just like adults, but even more so for kids because they can't eat that much at one time, that they do better and have more energy and feel better if they're snacking throughout the day. It's a good thing. Snacking is great for kids. And for them, it's more a matter of teaching. I think the biggest thing we can do is teach kids portion size because I think what I already see, you know, in my daughter who's in grade school, you already see it's really difficult for kids to know when to stop eating unless they have appropriate portions.
So what are some snacks that we can either for ourselves or for our children put in the lunchbox, have in the desk or in a locker or somewhere that we can get hold of that are good for us and we'll have just the right amount there?
Well, one thing kids really like is anything that's finger food, so anything that they can actually eat with their hands. And one of the easiest, best things you could ever make would just be the homemade trail mix where you have a whole grain cereal, a couple different cereals, and maybe even throw in a little bit of a sweetened cereal or, you know, a lot of kids like the frosted mini wheats because they have that little frosted
marshmallow. Or a little bit of dried fruit or something.
Yeah. You throw that in and you put in the fruit, put in some nuts or seeds or soy nuts, those kinds of things, because you can put those in those little containers or little Ziploc bags, and that works out really well. And even things, if you've got a container that you can actually keep cool for a lot of the day, even something like taking cheese, maybe buying the bricks of mozzarella cheese that are a lot less expensive than the cheese sticks and cutting them into little squares so you have some whole grain crackers and a little bit of cheese and maybe that's a snack because that's a good mix. And of course you could always throw in a little dried fruit with that as well.
Okay, let's take some more calls now. Next we're going to go to a listener on a cell phone on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
This
is a great program you have today. Thank you very much for all the good tips. I have a question about water consumption. A couple of years ago, my mother, who's in her late 70s, was advised by her physician to increase her water intake. She was taking some diuretic medication, high blood pressure medicine, and the doctor was concerned about her getting enough liquid. So on his advice, she consumed eight-ounce glasses every day of water. And after a while, her electrolytes got very out of balance. She ended up in the emergency room because she had just flushed her system of all the necessary electrolytes. And after this happened, it really made me wonder, you know, that eight-ounce glasses thing is something we've heard for years. And I just wonder, would that amount not vary depending on how much exercise the person is getting, what other kinds of liquid they might be taking in their diet? You know, and what should you do to know what is the right amount of hydration your body needs every day? So thank you for that, and I'll take my answer off the phone.
Okay.
Well, those are questions that have definitely come up in the last few years and been looked at more closely, and that's why our national recommendations now for fluid intake are really more geared on drinking when you're thirsty, not necessarily for any specific amount. So we no longer say, well, you have to have this amount of fluid every day. Eight-ounce glasses, for example, for your mother just obviously was too much for what her body could handle. So there are a couple ways you can look at it. You can say, you know, certainly we know if you have more weight, particularly if you have more muscle, you're going to need more fluid. It's going to be harder to stay hydrated. So a good rule of thumb to even start with is to say, well, maybe you take your body weight and divide it in half, and you try to get somewhere close to that amount of liquid a day. And it certainly doesn't have to be all water. It would be juice, milk, even coffee adds to your liquid intake. Or if you have yogurt, it's almost all liquid. So all those things add to your liquid intake. But if you take your weight, say your weight is 160 pounds, you divide it in half, that's 80. That would be 80 ounces of fluid would maybe be a good guideline to start with for that person. And again, that's every type of liquid that you would take in. Even in the summer when we eat a lot more fresh fruits and those kinds of things.
Watermelon or cucumber, iceberg lettuce.
Exactly. Those are 90 or 95% water, so it's a lot of fluid. The way that you can tell if you're hydrated is, for most of us, if about every couple hours, maybe every 2 hours or so, 2.5, 3 hours, we're going to the bathroom, we have a lot of urine, and it's relatively clear. Then we know we're hydrated. There's no reason that you need to go to the bathroom every hour. There's no reason you should feel like you're always having to go to the bathroom. Sometimes my clients tell me that. They're running to the bathroom every half an hour or something. Absolutely, you don't. That's too hydrated. You don't need to be that hydrated. And so I do think that it's helpful to say, yes, I want to keep fluids around during the day. I want to try to make sure I'm drinking, especially when it's hot. We do need more fluid. When you exercise, you should prehydrate at least maybe 8 ounces before, 30 minutes or so before you exercise.
When you get up in the morning?
And when you get up in the morning, you need at least 16 ounces because, again, most of us are down at least a pound in the morning. So we wake up dehydrated. So you got to start drinking at least that much when you wake up in the morning. And
well, drink till your thirst is relieved, I guess.
Exactly.
Because in the morning, too, you're going to have, chances are, you're going to have a cup of coffee or tea and a glass of milk or,
sure,
you know,
so
juice,
you could probably
something.
Get that in.
Or
exactly.
Fruit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, okay, very good. Let's take another call. Now a listener on line two. Where are we, Henry? Three? Okay, listener on line three in Urbana.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Yes, I also have a question concerning someone who's elderly. I guess we're going to the other end of the age spectrum here. I work with someone who ends up sleeping a lot during the day, and then nights can get a little boring. And I was wondering if there's anything that can be done food-wise to balance energy or to increase energy in the mornings as far as food choices.
One thing that sometimes helps is not having, having foods that are a mix of carbohydrate and protein. We know that protein does play a role in alertness. We know that from studies with kids in school that they tend to be able to do better in school and stay more alert. So I guess a good example might be if you would have, let's say, a bagel in the morning, typically in juice. That's fine, but it's almost all carbohydrates. So instead of that, maybe you have a half a bagel and you have a scrambled egg and you have juice. And so what's happened is you've bumped up the protein and you've got a little bit of fat, and it takes a little bit longer to digest, and that may be beneficial. Or you have a half glass of juice, and you add a glass of milk or soy milk or something like that so that the protein is more evened out. And for some people, that helps. They do feel like that lasts longer. They have a little more energy. It may balance blood sugars a little bit more, so they feel more energetic that way. And that would be something that's helpful, too. I also think for some people, they really do feel better having a little more caffeine earlier in the day and less late in the day. And we know that caffeine, because it is a central nervous system stimulant, does make us sometimes feel more alert. Of course, there's truth to that. So that might be something too. Or even for some people I work with who are elderly, having a little tea in the day is sometimes helpful with keeping them a little more, awake when they don't want to be napping. And obviously you don't want to go with large amounts of caffeine or anything, but that could be beneficial, too. But I would say make sure the protein is there. We know as people age, often their protein intake goes way down, which contributes to loss of muscle tissue, contributes to loss of muscle function. And we think that pound per pound protein needs are probably as high as ever when we get older, because we may not be getting as much exercise. And, again, calorie needs go down and calorie intake goes down, so the percentage that you eat from protein should actually be higher when we get older. So unless there's a kidney problem that someone couldn't handle that. But that would be the thing I would look for first.
Okay, listener, you want to follow up?
No, I just want to say thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hello. I had a question about my 12-year-old daughter. She has intermittent leg and foot cramps, and I've talked to her doctor about that, but we haven't really been able to isolate maybe what's causing it other than just growing pains or whatever. And I wondered if there might be something dietary I could supplement or make sure she's getting enough of that might prevent that kind of cramping.
Is she? Does it happen with exercise or just any time or any change in her exercise routine?
She's very athletic, and it doesn't happen during the athletics. It's usually when she's resting. If she's just kind of moving her feet around, all of a sudden it'll cramp up or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there are several things I would look at. One would be just making sure she's getting enough total energy, enough calories. Sometimes I'll have athletes I work with who don't cramp during exercise, but later they do, and we find they're just not eating enough. Their carbohydrate is low, so they can't stay as hydrated.
Sorry, did you say not enough carbohydrates?
Yes. So just making sure she's eating enough, and maybe she is. Maybe that's not an issue, but certainly even things like a little bit more juice if she's real active, that's quick kind of concentrated carbohydrates, which helps. Even something like orange juice that also has potassium. You know, we don't think potassium is probably as big of a problem when somebody's exercising, as they don't lose that much compared to sodium. That's the next thing I would go to. I would say, well, make sure if she is exercising and she's real active that she's getting enough salt in her diet too. You know, she wouldn't want to be on a low salt diet or anything like that, because of course, anytime she's sweating, she's losing salt, and that can be one of the main contributors, even after exercise, to cramping. So I would make sure she's doing that. Other minerals that can be helpful if they're low are things like magnesium and calcium, because they do affect muscle cramping or muscle tension and those kinds of things. So, you know, she should have probably 4 servings of a high calcium food a day to make sure her calcium is high enough. Typically, magnesium will come along with that, and maybe some other foods if she's eating nuts and seeds and meats and things like that too. But those might be things I'd look at. Certainly, you could start, if you're not doing it already, 100% multivitamin with iron, and that has some additional nutrients that might be beneficial. But I'd make sure she's really hydrated. I'd make sure she has enough salt, that she's using salt if she's exercising, and that she's not going too low on carbohydrate, on grains and fruits and veggies and maybe juices and things like that.
Okay, great. That's really helpful. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. What kinds of after-exercise snacks do you recommend for your young athletes?
Well, I think 2 things. One thing is, we know that and it doesn't matter what age, even if a kid is 7 and they're playing soccer every day or exercising every day, that the sooner they eat after a workout, the better, after practice or after playing, after a game, because that just helps get energy back in the system. So ideally something with protein and carbohydrate. You know, one of the best examples is even yogurt. You know, it may not be that portable, but mm-hmm. if you have a cooler and you got yogurt, or even a yogurt that you can just squeezable yogurt.
Drink.
Yeah, or yogurt drink would be great, because you've got carbohydrate and protein there too, and calcium, which kids need. So that's a good benefit. Or something as simple as graham crackers with peanut butter on them. So maybe you take those and have that in a juice box right after. So what you're getting is there's protein in the peanut butter, or again, cheese cubes and crackers in a juice box would be really easy. If a parent brought that after a game or something, so that you start getting some energy back in quickly. And I mm-hmm. think we got to remember with kids that they do need to keep drinking more after they play or after they practice, because they can get dehydrated very quickly. And so get them some food, have them something, you know, give something to drink, whether it's a juice or a sport drink or at least extra water, and then make sure that they keep drinking at night too to help replenish fluids.
Yeah. We've got about 5 minutes left in this portion of the afternoon magazine. If you've got a question about diet, nutrition, give us a call. Talk to our guest, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. The phone number's in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And we've got a call coming in now on the toll free line. And as soon as that's ready to go, we'll go there. Line 4. Good afternoon. You're on the air. Line 4?
Hello.
Hi there.
I can hardly hear you, but I just want to follow through on the person's talk about energy, snacking, and so forth.
Uh-huh.
There was a famous writer who traveled across the country, and he would be virtually snacking on pine nuts. It seemed that the amino acid tyrosine was a great enhancing energy booster, and I thought I'd offer that along the line of among the things that people can certainly appreciate in terms of protein, and not just pine nuts, but all nuts in general do have a good energy level and well-balanced. And so I thought I'd offer that.
Yeah,
but there's a negative to this, just like there's a negative to too much sweet things. Tyrosine, I heard later on, has a kind of offhand detrimental effect that seems to be enhancing growth factors that might be in the body that, who knows, cancerous and so forth. Same thing with arginine, the other amino acid. So a little bit of something is good, but a little bit too much is no good. But following through on one second question, I'd also heard some controversy about the vitamin C. On the one hand, it's an antioxidant, and then when you get too much, it's a pro-oxidant. So there's a balance there that we can try to strive for, but what that is in each individual is hard to determine. We had Linus Pauling virtually taking, I don't know how many grams of vitamin C, mm-hmm. but then the body can only assimilate so much. So I just thought I'd offer the good and the bad for consideration if you want to make any comments.
Okay, thanks for the call.
That's great comments because it is so true, and it all gets back to what we always get back to, which is really trying to eat a lot of different foods, balanced foods. And his point about the pine nuts is great because it's, you know, pine nuts, like nuts and seeds, are foods that naturally have these great amino acids. They have protein, they have good fat, they have some carbohydrate. It's would be the type of snack that really is more of a natural snack, but of course you'd want to vary what you're eating. You don't want to just eat pine nuts or you might, who knows, run into some trouble.
Yeah,
but
they're delicious, but they're also fattening.
They are. They can add up fast, too.
And nuts, the recommended serving size, if I'm recalling correctly from our past visits, Susan, about a quarter cup a day.
Yeah, about a quarter cup to a third a cup.
So that's what you can essentially hold in the palm of your hand, an adult.
Right. It's not a lot,
nope.
but it certainly is enough that we think it's beneficial from what we know from studies. So it can be a great addition.
Also, what he had to comment on also gets us to the point where we as human beings so often think, well, if a little bit is good for me, just think what a whole bunch of this would do for me. And I remember having a conversation with a very intelligent, youngish woman, maybe in her 20s, and she had a very bad cold, and she just thought if she just gobbled down that whole jar of vitamin C tablets, she'd be okay. And I said, I don't think it works that way.
She would have some gastrointestinal disturbances.
Yes.
To put it mildly.
Okay. So go with moderation. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's
okay.
Exactly.
Very
right.
Good. We could probably get one more call in. Well, maybe not that. Let's talk about something else then in the meantime, because I don't want to stray too much past our time.
Okay. Well, I did bring a handout that is called Live Well, Eating the Nutrient-Rich Way on the Go. Gives all kinds of recommendations for fast snacks at home, what to choose from the vending machine or convenience store, desk drawer stashes, things that you could take to work or keep with you. And so we'll have that available, too. So I'll leave that if anybody wants to send
a self-addressed stamped envelope to WILL Radio, Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, 61801. And before we go, I found out this morning that September is National Food Safety Education Month. So let's do our part here.
Yes.
You as an educator on the nutrition and diet end of things. Now think about your family's health, you and your family's health. Remember to wash your hands, right? We all know what to do, right?
Right. But, wash your hands. Don't contaminate one food from another. Cook things properly, right? And one of the biggest things I think is in a refrigerator, don't have raw meats where they could drip down on anything else, because I do see that a lot still. So that's a big problem.
Okay, so clean your hands up, clean your foods up, clean your fridge up, clean the counters off.
You're in good shape.
Keep things separated. Cook things the way they should be cooked. And keep things that should be cool or chilled.
Right.
Okay. The theme, by the way, for National Food Safety Education Month is foodborne pathogens. Your family's health is in your hands. Very good.
Okay,
we did our part.
That's right.
All right. We'll see you, Susan, on the first Monday in October, I hope.
Okay,
very good. By then, it will be fall. Susan Kundrat joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, unless the first Monday is a holiday like it was yesterday, Labor Day yesterday. Nutrition on the Move is Susan's business. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. And the websites that we mentioned today, we'll put links to them on our website at will.uiuc.edu.